Hello and welcome. We're back again this evening to talk about contracts, consideration, legality, and also public policy. Last time, if you may recall, we spoke about contractual capacity, the fact that you have to understand and be of legal age and competent in order to make a contract. Why? Because it's an agreement, and you have to know what you're agreeing to in order for that agreement to be valid. We talked about mistake, and on the same basis, you need to know what's in that contract. How can you agree to something that's mistaken? We talked about deception and pressure. Deception is when there's an intentional misrepresentation. It's known as fraud or non-disclosure. We also talked about pressure, things like duress. Put either your signature or your brains on the contract, forcing someone to enter that contract. Well, that's not an agreement either. And we talked about the Gersting case, whereby there was an allegation of duress. And the court said, it's not duress when the person has the legal right to do what you're saying that they didn't have the right to do. So as a result of that, in the Gersting case, if you may remember, they said that's a duress. Well, he was just enforcing his legal rights, so that wasn't a compulsion because he had the right to do it. So as a result of that, that wasn't forcing someone in. Tonight, we're going to shift gears, and we're going to go into the next elements of what constitutes a contract. We're going to talk about consideration, a promise for a promise. Consideration is when you give up something in return for getting that promise. We're going to talk about legality. What is the quintessential element of a contract? That it has to be legal. You can't make a contract that is illegal or to do something that will result in it breaking the law. Also, we're going to talk about public policy. There are certain contracts that the courts and the legislature have found that people shouldn't be entering into, or there's certain ways that those contracts should not be entered, things like unconscionability. Lastly, we're going to wrap up with our case tonight, which is a very famous case written by a very famous judge, Allegheny College versus National Chautauqua County Bank. Chautauqua is in Jamestown, which is in the far western part of our state. Very famous case on how consideration is consideration. And the old expression that you learn in law school is consideration is consideration is consideration. When is consideration there and when is it not? Well, with respect to charities, and this involved the college, which is a charitable institution, sometimes it's there when you even think it isn't. And we'll talk about that in our case. Let's jump right in. Consideration. We're going to talk about what it means. We're going to talk about its general principles. We're going to talk about some of its exceptions. Before we get in there, let's do a little bit of review because repetition is the mother of learning. Black's Law Dictionary describes a contract as an agreement. That's its quintessential element. It's an agreement. The two parties come together and agree. Between two or more parties. Can be 16 of them, but it's got to be at least two. And it creates obligations that are enforceable or recognizable at law. What are the quintessential elements of a contract? First and foremost, as we said, agreement. The two parties have to agree. The parties have to be competent. They have to be able to understand what they're agreeing to. Because if they don't understand what they're agreeing to, there is no contract. And along the line with that, that agreement, that understanding has to be genuine. That there has to be what we call genuine assent. That means they really got to agree that there's an agreement and they got to agree to it. Tonight, we're going to talk about that fourth element. It's got to be supported by consideration. Otherwise, it's a gift or it's a non-binding promise. It's got to have consideration. And that consideration has to be mutual. Both parties have to give consideration, not just one. It's got to be for a lawful purpose, subject matter. We'll talk about that in the next lecture. That's got to be in legal format. That means certain contracts have to be in writing. Certain contracts need to be notarized. Whatever that requirement is, it has to match up to it. Now, what exactly is consideration? It's not being nice, not being considerate. What is consideration? It's something such as an act or a forbearance. That means I won't do this, or a return promise. So it's an act, a forbearance, or a return promise. And remember, a forbearance is I'm entitled to do something and I won't do it because you don't want me to. It's bargained for. We negotiate over that. If you give me this, I'll give you that. It's a bargain. Received by the promisor from a promise that motivates a person to do something. In law school, they tell you something simple. It's a promise for a promise. Way we describe that is, it's a bargain for exchange. I'll give you this if you give me that. You give up something of legal value to the other person making the agreement. That can be a forbearance. I won't do this, but you're giving up your right to do it. Or it can be something affirmative. If you will do this, I will do that. It's the price you pay for the contract. Can be money, can be an action. As we said, it could be a refusal to act. It is the value or promise given, and it can be goods, services, property, or forbearance of a legal right. It has to be mutual. Both parties have to do it. Each party is required to furnish consideration to the other. This is the mutuality of consideration. It's got to be both parties doing it together. Doesn't have to be the same consideration, but both have to give consideration. What's the purpose of consideration? Why do we require that for a contract? First and foremost, not all promises are legally enforceable. The purpose of consideration is distinguished between those that are enforceable and those that aren't. If it's not mutual, it's not enforceable. And consideration demonstrates that it has to be. A gift is an unenforceable promise. What's the function of consideration? There's twofold. First, it's an evidentiary function. It's a manner how you can prove that there's a contract. There's a contract because he promised to do this. He paid me money. He gave me this car in return for me turning around and giving him money. It's an evidentiary function. It concretizes the deal. There's also a cautionary function. The requirement that the promise must be supported by consideration serves this cautionary function. Means the party's aware that by providing this thing, this promise or this service or this money, makes that person have skin in the game. It allows a person to take a pause. I'm not entering this contract. I got to give this up. Well, if they give it up, they know they want to really agree. So that's the two-step function of consideration. One is evidence. The other one is it gives them time to pause, gives the parties time to think, and it reduces the likelihood that this is just a false contract. What's the measure of consideration? Well, as we said, it's a bargain for exchange. I will give you this if you give me that. It's a legal detriment. If I'm giving you something, it means I have to give something up. And as a result of that, whether even it be in a forbearance or something positive, I have to do something for it. Now, what about adequacy? Saying that's not a fair deal, that's not a square deal. The law generally does not concern themselves with the adequacy of consideration. Why is that? Well, it's because we want to give parties freedom of contract. And if we impose our view on what is valuable, it may not be somebody else's view of what is valuable. Because what is valuable to one person may not be valuable at all to somebody else. So the law generally does not look at what is the amount of the consideration given? As long as it is given, and as long as it's freely given, it's sufficient. So the sufficiency of consideration, did that person give enough, is not reviewable by courts. They don't look at that. They say, we don't care. What we care about is you gave that to. Now, there is two major exceptions to this rule about whether or not there should be adequate consideration. First and foremost, past consideration or a pre-existing legal obligation as consideration is not consideration. Why? Because I'm not giving something up, because I already gave it up for some other reason. So if I turn around and say, I will give you something, and that is something I already gave away, you gave away your air conditioner to your best friend. And that person has it. And you go now to make a new contract with someone who really likes that best friend. And you say, in return for this contract, I want to buy your car. In return for that, I'm also going to give, in addition to what we're going to talk about agreeing, I'm going to start by giving that air conditioner to your best friend. Well, guess what? You already did that. So that is not consideration. So to the extent it's not sufficient, because you're really not giving anything up, that is not adequate consideration. So too is a past legal obligation or a pre-existing legal obligation. If you're under a court order to do something every month, you can't turn around and say, oh, we'll do a contract and I'll do this thing every month. Why? You're already required to do it. Similarly, moral obligations are not consideration. So all of these things aren't really insufficient consideration. It's no consideration because there's no contract there. You're not giving anything up. Now, where there is fraud or there is unconscionability, and we'll get to what that means in a moment, or the consideration is sham or incidental, I pay you a dollar for your house, okay? Then the courts will look at that and say, is that really consideration or is that really a gift? which case it's hard to show. So you look at that, that can be an exception, but you have to demonstrate that it is nominal and that there really was no consideration there, not that the consideration was insufficient. So adequacy of consideration, not much of a factor. Forbearance. We have two types of consideration. You have positive consideration, which means you take an affirmative act to do something. I'll pay you money. I'll mow your lawn. I'll do something for you. That's one way to deliver consideration. Another is forbearance. I have a legal right to do something, and you don't want me to do that anymore for whatever reason. You say, stop doing that. And if you say that and I agree to it, that's a forbearance. Then I will agree to that. And as a result of that, that is the two types of consideration. Positive consideration, which is an affirmative act. Forbearance, which is me agreeing to refrain from doing something that I have a legal right to do. Excuse me. Illusory promises. This becomes an issue substantially when it comes to the serious questions of the law over whether or not it was an actual promise. And an illusory promise is a promise that appears on its face to be so insubstantial to impose no obligation. It's often an expression cloaked in some kind of promissory terms, but it's not really a promise. If you say, I'll see what I can do, that's not a promise. It has to be a real promise. It can't be illusionary. An illusory is a term that relates to it's really not real. It's not what it seems to be. An illusory promise is not actually a promise. It just seems like that. And as such, without a promise for a promise, there is no consideration. Now, in a bilateral contract, each party makes a promise to the other. And for a bilateral contract to be enforceable, there must be a mutual obligation there. That is, both parties must have created the obligations. If one of the parties' promise contains either no obligation or only some kind of apparent obligation, then the promise is illusory. If the other party says, I'll give you my car in return for that house, and the other party says, well, I'll see what I can do about getting to the house. Well, guess what? That's not a promise. The party making the promise is not bound until he or she has made a real promise. Okay? The effect is that the other party who has made a real promise is not bound because the other party has not made it. It fails for the lack of mutuality. Now, what about conditional promises where the occurrence of an event in the future makes that a real promise? If I turn around and I say, I'll buy your car on Tuesday if the friend who I sold my bicycle to pays me. Well, that is a real binding contract, assuming that the friend pays me for the bicycle. If they do, then it's a binding promise. If they don't, then it's not. Conditional promises are enforceable in the event that the condition occurs. The condition doesn't, then it's not, but if because the both parties know that going in there. It's an if, then, it will happen. Conditional promises will be held as enforceable if the condition occurs. Charitable subscriptions, and this is largely what our case is going to be about tonight. Charitable subscriptions are held to a higher standard for consideration, where individuals make a pledge to a charity, and consideration is lacking in return for that promise. I pledge $5,000 for a charity in return for the charity doing something. Okay? That can be a contract. Public policy reasons hold that courts, in reliance of that charity, if that charity then does what I ask it to, even though it's not necessarily doing anything for me, give an example. The case tonight, it's going to be a situation where I pledge to give you $5,000 every year so long as you name a scholarship for my wife, for my daughter, for my cousin. If the college does that and I don't pay them, they can sue me. Even though the college didn't do anything other than name that scholarship that I'm going to fund. Why? Because charities are held to a higher standard. The charity relied on that pledge, and hence they have to have it. Another exception to consideration is the UCC. In certain circumstances, the Uniform Commercial Code abolishes the requirement of consideration. A merchant's firm written offer for goods stated to be irrevocable. That can be upheld even though there's no consideration given for it. A written discharge of claim for alleged breach of a commercial contract. Again, no consideration given for it, but it is held to be enforceable. An agreement to modify a contract for the sale of goods. Again, no consideration, still done. Now, there also is a doctrine called promissory estoppel. And that doctrine, under certain circumstances, it's called a doctrine of detrimental reliance, provides that under certain circumstances, the law will hold the contract enforceable even when there is no consideration. Now, it's a four-step dance to get there. The promisor must make a promise that lacks consideration. The promisor intends or should reliably expect that the promisee will rely on the promise. I make a promise, no consideration is given to me for that promise, but I know that the promisee is going to rely on this, similar to what happens with the charity. The promisee, in fact, does rely on the promise and in a definite and substantial manner. And the enforcement of that promise is the only way to secure injustice. Damages are recoverable in this case, and you can enforce those contracts. Why? You made me a promise. I relied on that promise to my detriment. And what it is viewed as is, even though you didn't give any consideration for that, my injury as a result of relying on your promise is deemed to be the consideration. It's kind of a legal fiction. That's it for consideration. As you can see, it is a something for a something. It's giving up a value for the agreement. Remember the biggest thing, it can be positive or it can be negative. It can be positive in that you do something for it, or it can be a forbearance. see you shortly when we're going to go into legality. Thanks so much for your time.